Once more into the breach, dear friend.
He'll spill up the wall with our English dead.
Good morning again, ladies and gentlemen. Again, not going to say boys and girls. To another episode, exciting to us at least, of the Personal Wealth Coach with
Jeff
and Jake McClure.
We got this. We are definitely out of coordination.
Well, your microphone has fallen off of the stand. I thought I would take a different role this morning as you try to fix it. Here, let me turn off that mic real quick so that you can make noise to your heart's content. A noisy heart is not good, I guess. Anyway, this is the Personal Wealth Coach. We are going to be talking to you today about economics, the market, finance, investments, all kinds of good stuff. He's busily dropping things over in the other corner. We are not only a radio presentation, we are also not coincidentally the same name. The Personal Wealth Coach is also a SEC registered investment advisory firm. That's a fiduciary service. That doesn't mean that the SEC gives us any kind of approval, that they're our regulatory authority, which means if we say something beyond the pale of stupidity, you got to have a relative measurement here, because a lot of what we say is stupid. But if we say something beyond the pale, they are the people that you should complain to. So, this week we have lots of good things to talk about, and as old Baldy over here fixes... Okay, here we go. Coming up with the microphone for old Baldy. Young Baldy is no longer doing a monologue. There you go.
That was an interesting
that
sound.
That sounded like a Klingon vessel approaching.
Well, it probably was. But anyway, this is the Personal Wealth Coach, and I've been... This is Jeff, and I've been camping out up in the mountains. I can't hear myself very well for some reason.
All right. You've got your mic. It's all good.
Turn the headphones up a little bit. And I'm back, refreshed, confused, and wondering what the heck happened to the weather while I was gone, but that's all right. I mean, I left here, and it was the desert, and I came back, and it's the tropics. I want to know how that happened. You're hearing something, aren't you?
Yes, I hear music in the background somewhere.
Yeah, me too. That's
definitely
pretty cool.
Hearing some music.
Well, it could be that we're picking up music from some other station or something. But
could be.
Could be we're off frequency.
A little bit strange. Got everything turned off that should be. All right, if you guys hear music in the background, let us know. If it's just our own audible hallucinations, then it should be good. We have a caller on 773-1400. Caller, you are on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. I was just going to mention if you get involved in possibly getting a hold of some counterfeit money through transactions, and then you go make a purchase somewhere, and you know how they check the money and it turns out to be counterfeit and you don't really know anything about it. You know, they probably send the police there. How do you handle that situation? You have a good day.
All right. Good question. Well, the easiest answer to that is kind of a silly answer, which is from the most simplest, the most simple perspective, don't accept counterfeit money. Just like stolen goods, when you purchase stolen goods, even if you don't know that they're stolen, and this is going to touch on some of the other things that we'll be talking about this week, today. If you're purchasing something that's stolen and it is found out later on that it's stolen, guess what? It's going to get taken from you. The government is going to come and say that doesn't belong to you, even if you paid for it. You may lose money on the deal as well. When it comes to counterfeit money, it is your responsibility to check that money before you receive it. Now, the likelihood is that they're not going to prosecute you if you've got a couple of $100 bills that are counterfeit and you have a good statement on where they came from. So, do you have anything to add to that?
No, I think that's probably the thing. You're technically violating the law by passing counterfeit money. And you theoretically could get in trouble. Factually, the vast majority of counterfeit money is obviously counterfeit money. And the thing is, pay attention to the money. I mean, I've seen counterfeit money in demonstrations years ago, and the vast majority of it doesn't really look like real money. It's intended to be passed.
And they're getting really good at it now.
But it's intended to be passed with other money mixed in with it, and people don't notice. The little thread in there and things like that. So I don't think, fundamentally, if you have a very, very good counterfeit bill and you have, let's say, $5, $20 bills and one of them is a counterfeit bill, and it's exceptionally well made, they're going to confiscate that money. If they check it, they're not going to accept it as money, and you're probably going to get a visit from
the Secret Service.
From the Secret Service or somebody that's going to ask you where you got the money. And
somebody from the Treasury Department, yeah.
Yeah, and you obviously didn't get it from an ATM because an ATM machine would have caught it.
Wait a minute. You just hit my pet peeve.
Really?
Yeah. You said ATM machine. That's like an ATM M.
Well, okay, an ATM squared would have caught it.
Yeah, so...
So you probably got it from an individual, and whoever the individual was that gave it to you, in all likelihood, is also going to get questioned. Now, if you got it from a merchant, that's a different story, but
yeah.
You probably, and again...
And merchants generally aren't going to pass it on either. They generally are not giving change in the denominations that are highest counterfeited. The highest counterfeited bills are the $100 bills followed by the $20 bills. So if you're receiving one of those, do some extra looking because there are strips in there. There's little holograms. Some good counterfeiters can fix it, can get around even that. Our money keeps changing, but the way we can print money at home is changing as well. So the idea here is if you have cash that's been given to you by someone, and you go to a store and you try to buy it and they say this is counterfeit, well, then the best thing to do, number one, and this is not the Ask an Attorney show, is tell them where you got it. Because if it was a friend of yours that gave it to you, then they got scammed too, unless you've got a kind of a friend that is not really a friend. If they're giving you counterfeit money, that's not good. Really, really not good. That's not a friend. So whoever gave you the money, tell that to the Treasury Department because they need to get back to the source.
Actually, the chances, you didn't actually counterfeit money. You just passed counterfeit money.
It's a theoretical.
But this is the point. Here's where people get in trouble. If you lie to a federal agent, that's a crime.
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of people who have done something that is really minor, it's a misdemeanor or even a civil offense, and a federal agent shows up and asks them questions about it, and they decided to prevaricate just a little bit. Bingo, you're in trouble.
Right, and here's a really good example of that. Martha Stewart. Martha Stewart, this is a little-known fact, she used to be a stockbroker. Did you know that?
I did.
So it's a little-known, except between the two of us, we both know it, so it's a well-known fact between us. Martha Stewart knows securities laws. She went to jail. But it wasn't for insider trading, even though that is a very provable fact. She did insider trading. She went to jail for lying to the federal investigators, lying to the FBI about the insider trade. She's a billionaire with a B. She maybe made $100,000 in profits on that trade. She went to prison for a long period of time. Think of the value of a billionaire's money or a billionaire's time wasted in prison. She lied to the investigator. So something that is very, very clear, you are allowed to be quiet. We're not attorneys in here, but you're allowed not to answer. Say, I want to talk with my attorney first, if you're not sure. But if you, and by the way, Martha Stewart can afford very good attorneys. If you lie to the FBI agent or to the SEC agent or the Treasury Department agent who's coming to investigate a federal crime, you've just committed a federal crime. So be careful what you say. Say it well. If it was a friend of yours that gave you the counterfeit money, if that friend knew it was counterfeit, here's a statement for you. That was not your friend. They gave you something fake to pay you money. If they knew it was counterfeit, they need to go to jail. If they didn't know it was counterfeit, tell them the same thing we're telling you. Answer the agents. Let's figure out who did it, because somebody scammed them. If you received cash that's counterfeit, somebody scammed you. Somebody may have scammed the person that gave it to you. Indirectly, there's a scam involved. Somebody's passing off Monopoly money. Not cool. And we got to get that fixed right away, because that stuff, that messes up business from one end to the other. It messes up, you know, if you buy a DVD player, there's an old antiquated idea. If you bought a DVD player at a pawn shop and you got it all plugged in, and then somebody knocks on your door and says, hey, that was counterfeit that you used to pay for it. Well, you're going to lose the DVD player unless you can come up with money that's not counterfeit to pay for it.
By the way, we didn't do something.
What's that?
We didn't tell him the telephone number to call.
Right, we didn't.
So this guy who called obviously has a good memory.
Yeah, he's a regular caller.
Okay, so it's 254-773-1400. Now, that's only under certain circumstances. If today is September 22nd where you are.
Right. If it is not the first day of autumn in the year 2018, then you cannot use that number to call us, or we won't be here.
You know, we have an anniversary. Well, first off, we probably ought to talk about the market.
Let's do that. That's usually how we start. We're already 20 minutes into the program, and we haven't said it.
It was a good week for the stock market. The the S&P 500, our favorite, actually, there's a lot of different ways of looking at it, but the S&P 500 is the one that's widely published that is probably the best one. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is only 30 stocks, and it can be quite different from the way the rest of the market is going. But it was up 0.85% this week, closing at a very memorable 29.2967. Leave the 67 off, and you just remember 29.29.
Yeah, it'll be good for a whole day.
Well, yeah, but I have these little markers in my mind. Like, I remember when it cost 2,900. You know, I mean, that's I remember when it was 27.27, and I remember when it was 667.
Yep, that was the bottom.
But it's an interesting point. The collapse of Lehman Brothers was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And that really marked the beginning of the panic period in the markets. And so we now have had a bull market.
Since then.
And the expansion. The bull market actually started in 2009. So we got another year. Not quite. We've got about, 8 months before, 6 or 8 months before the actual market bottomed in 2009, 10 years ago. So we really only have a 9.5 year bull market
right,
at this point.
Right. We can round it up if we want, though.
Well, particularly since we're in Texas, we can do a roundup.
Roundups are good.
Yeah. But the point is that we've had an amazingly long-running bull market if you measure it from the bottom. If you measure it from the top, it's not quite so impressive, because it was like in the upper 2800s. I don't remember the exact top of the market in early this year in January. So we're not really a great deal above where we were in January, and we're certainly, and we've had the average annual rate of return, if you basically got in at the top of the market back in 2007, your average annual rate of return has been about 7.8%. So it's a long-running bull market, but
it hasn't been like the 90s where it was 12 to 15% a year.
We've kind of crossed the point where we're no longer in recovery.
Yeah, we're more full into expansion at this point.
Yeah, and that's an important thing to recognize. Markets have cycles. Economies have cycles. We are in a cycle, and we are in the high part of the cycle. And that's
right, the maturity part.
And it's really important to understand that. It's important to understand all the symptoms that occur, all the signs that occur when a market is on a roll and in a high portion as opposed to when it's low and is a bargain. But the other thing that's happened this week in the markets that's pretty significant is that the 10-year U.S. Treasury yield crossed the 3% point and stayed there. It actually crossed it on Tuesday and managed to stick. Now, it's crossed above 3% on several occasions, but it only stays there a couple of days before it falls back again. And let me explain what that means. When people are buying treasuries, a lot of treasuries, there's a high demand for treasuries, the price of the treasury goes up because the people are buying it. And
the interest rate goes down.
But buying treasuries is loaning money. Now, that's where people really get, it's going to be very, very, buying any bond is loaning money to whoever issued the bond. The backside to that is when there's a lot of demand for loans, when people want to borrow more money for some reason, then interest rates go up and the price of the bond goes down. And we're just talking about interest rates here. So the fact that the interest rates on the U.S. Treasury got above 3% and stayed there means there is a relatively large amount of demand to borrow money. Now, who's borrowing the money in this case? It's the United States government.
Yeah, pretty clear.
But the United States government is the 800-pound gorilla that likes to borrow money. It is the biggest borrower in the world. And we can go into that as another story. But the fact is, we are breaking some other interesting records. The S&P 500 broke its all-time record, 2931, on Thursday, and then it slid back. Actually, it got up to 2940 Friday morning.
And then it slid back down,
probably because it's Friday and it's raining.
Here it's raining. It's not raining everywhere.
Well,
that's the thing about rain.
If it's raining where I am, it's raining everywhere.
That's a very egocentric point of view.
Well, there's a... this is my point, though. There's a very good article in Barron's about... rather in the Wall Street Journal, I think it is, about the seasonality of markets.
This is theoretically
the worst month, September. Market goes down in September. People are afraid of September.
There's been a lot of psychological experiments on this subject, and October either is a great month or a bad month, usually. Yep. You either have the big crashes happen there, but also some of the big run-ups in the market happen there.
But there's a really good article in the Wall Street Journal. It was either yesterday or today, that explains that. People, when it's raining a lot, have a tendency to be less likely to buy anything that they expect to sell at a higher price in the future, including stocks.
Right. They're much more likely to do repairs on their home.
Yeah.
No.
Wait a minute. I know the fact. There's a hole in the ceiling, and if it's raining, you don't fix it because it's raining. And then when it's not raining, you don't fix it because it's not raining.
Okay. Yeah. But the reality is that September, October, around the beginning of fall, people tend to do a lot more repairs, but they also tend to do a lot less big investment.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting ready for the winter.
And there is a correlation between the amount of rain that they have in New York City and the behavior of the stock market.
Yep.
And it's been raining a lot in New York City because there was this hurricane that came ashore.
Hurricane. Well, let's be completely PC.
No, wait a minute. They've always been called hurricanes, and in the interest of equality, we need to call every other one a hurricane.
Her name was Florence.
Well, the man, it was a hurricane.
Yeah. If it's Frederick, you can name it a hurricane.
Actually, it should be Sheacane.
All right.
Is named Frederick. Her is named Florence. Doesn't make any sense. Anyway.
You're right.
There was a lot of rain. And the important thing about this is that the market went up anyway.
Yeah.
But it rained on Friday in New York, and so the market started slipping downward.
And we just heard from China that they're not going to be negotiating on some of the trade deals that we wanted them to.
Oh, who cares about China? The market, obviously.
The market doesn't at the moment.
The Shanghai index went up on the announcement of increased tension on trades. Of course, it's still 21% down from its peak.
Right.
This is a bear market.
But one of the reasons also why it went up is that the U.S. dollar has dropped in value this week, all week long.
Yeah, for the first time in a long time. Why did it drop in value?
Because it looks like we're not actually going to make the deals that we've been promising. Where it was before, as the rest of the world and we thought that the deal was going to happen, we were going to get a better end of the deal. The dollar was going up, which caused us not to feel so much of the pain of the trade war because we could buy more with a stronger dollar. But anybody that's exporting was feeling the pain even more because people were able to buy less of their product because of the stronger dollar and because of tariffs.
So then you should buy Bitcoin.
No. That was a segue of segues. No, Bitcoin, no. Pot, cannabis stocks, no. I've got to throw in a plug here because we got to play some commercials real quick. The plug is...
Stand by for a plug.
This is a good plug. This weekend, specifically today, but also the rest of the weekend, is the Salado Chocolate and Wine Weekend.
Yay!
Rain or not, this is chocolate, this is wine. Get out to Salado and have a good time. Shameless part of the plug is that I have been donating to and helping to run a not-for-profit Montessori preschool out there, Salado Montessori.
I thought you were going to talk about our business, not-for-profit.
No, that is definitely for-profit business. I think that's a good thing. The not-for-profit side that I've been spending a lot of time on is Salado Montessori, and they're putting on a grape stomp. It's a wine festival. It's at the Salado Winery. So you can get in and take your shoes off. There's an I Love Lucy look-alike competition. They give you hairstyles with a little cloth tie backs.
And that's at the very northern end of Main Street in Salado.
Yes.
In other words, if you get it, was it 285 or 286 with the exit?
285 is the exit.
Okay, you get off. You get off on the 285 exit, and if you're coming from the north and you start to head south, and it'll be on your left. There is the Salado Winery.
Yeah, so there's going to be chocolate, there's going to be wine. It's really kind of hard the first day of fall to not go out and participate here. It is rainy today, but that's kind of a good thing in Texas.
Yeah. Now,
so
if you ask Siri, Siri will tell you to go there.
Right, will she?
Well, if you ask Siri the meaning of life, the universe, and everything, one of her standard answers is,
chocolate.
I don't know, but it has something to do with chocolate.
There you go.
So Siri won't say wine, but... I will say that a combination of wine and chocolate, if you're feeling depressed, will make you feel less depressed temporarily.
So I highly recommend going and checking out the wine and the chocolate in Salado today. It will be fun. And if you're cooped up in the house with rain, you can be watching the television or you can get in your car with an umbrella and you can go warm yourself with some wine and good company.
Yeah, I completely concur. I think that would be a very good thing to do today.
And we'll talk about that more throughout our 2 hours, just because it is today, and it's an important fundraiser.
Is today the first day of fall?
It is. It's the 22nd of September.
Well, congratulations. We made it through summer.
It's the equinox. Yeah. Last night and today are exactly the same length of darkness and brightness.
So the sun rises and sets at a 12-hour interval. Except we won't be able to see it.
I don't think it's exactly 12, something like that. Yeah,
okay.
Roughly 12. Yeah, roughly 12. So, yeah, and it should. That's a kind of a cool little transition point. Happy fall, everybody. Happy autumn. When does daylight savings come in?
It's November 4th or November something or another, I think.
Let's see. Yeah, November 4th.
Yeah, it's the same day we do elections. It gives us an extra hour to count over elections.
Oh, yeah. I will have an extra hour of sleep, and other people will stay up all night counting votes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is like counting cards, but legal.
Yes.
Well, anyway, we need to let Town Square Media and KTEM stay in existence because they have commercials they need to play, which we have nothing to do with, so we're going to break and do that.
We'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. This is Jake McClure. That's Jeff McClure. We have phone number in here of 254-947. That's not it.
You did it.
That's the Salado
773-1400.
That's right. 254-773-1400. We'll be back on the other side. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach,
starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure.
Listen to that. It's like we're in unison here.
Well, actually, we're more in harmony, I think.
All right, what did you have to say?
I wanted to talk about a Ponzi scheme.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And I want to talk about the Ponzi scheme because
Before you get into the Ponzi scheme,
okay, before we get into
the
Ponzi
scheme, there is a precursor to this that needs to be put in here.
A precursor.
Before you start cursing the Ponzi's,
all right,
let's put the pre in the precursor. The SEC is back at full strength with five commissioners. That's us being
That's the sound of four hams
very,
clapping.
Very geekily happy that the FBI for securities is out there on track again, because there are a lot of scams going on right now.
Of course, whether the commissioners have any common sense is questionable. They did.
They're actually pretty common sense people.
Well, no, they've proposed a couple of definitions of fiduciary and non-fiduciary and so on.
Right.
When they were, even in their hearings, when they were submitted to a group of members of the public,
right,
and asked to explain what they mean,
they couldn't figure it out.
Yeah, there were more confused than they did at the beginning.
That's what came out yesterday. There was a group of 30 investors, not professional investors, members of the public that do investing, that were brought in as the SEC's advisory council on this stuff. They were presented with this new fiduciary simplified rule, and it was handed back to them and said, the 30 people said, we don't have a clue what this stuff means. You need to be clear. You need some way of educating us, because this is stupid.
It is.
And it is. I mean, it's better than nothing, but it's still pretty dumb.
I read the really short things that they want stockbrokers and investment advisors to give.
And it was
really fascinating. I say really short. It was several pages long.
Yeah, several pages long, single-spaced.
But the Institute for Fiduciary Studies, I think it is, came out with a one-page jobby that was very clear and made a lot of sense, but probably the bureaucrats of the SEC won't use it because it's too short and it has short words in it.
Well, that's one of the good things about the commission that is in place now. It just came into place on the 5th of this month. The last commissioner was approved by the Senate. That's not something that hit the news. We're talking about Supreme Court nomination right now, and the Democrats pushing against the Republicans pushing back. Throwing mud, scandals, nasty stuff happening. In the background, the SEC's at full strength. Mm-hmm. The Senate did go through the confirmation process there and produced a commission that is a good law enforcement body.
Three Republicans, three Democrats, and the chairman is the same party as the president. The problem is that the statement they came out with, the so-called short statement, which is three pages long and has lots of long words in it, was rated by several independent agencies and said it took at least 2 years of college to understand.
Right.
You had to be reading at the 14th grade level to comprehend what it meant, and the average investor reads at the 8th grade level.
Which is a good thing in that it says that the SEC is hiring a lot of intelligent people. It's a bad thing in that they don't know how to write for your common citizen.
And the average person reading the document came away from there thinking that a stockbroker, quote, financial advisor, end quote, was more of a fiduciary than an independent registered investment advisor.
Which is the opposite of what they meant.
In other words, they basically came out with a document that came up meaning the opposite of what the truth was, which...
Well, that's pretty par for the course.
Like the SEC.
Par for the course for the media, for the government. Here's the truth, and it sure sounds like the opposite.
Yeah, it's... But the fact that we have a full... Is it five commissioners or seven?
At this point, it's got five commissioners.
Okay, so it's full with five. It's two, and one.
And
one, yeah, and the chairman. They didn't get a beef up in their enforcement number. They still got their budget cut last year.
But at least they have the ability to make good decisions, where before it was based on one person's decision, which is challengeable in court, which means even if they got a Ponzi scheme, they could just sue the SEC for not having a full commission. So,
are you aware, by the way, that about 278, I think it was, fines and penalties were thrown out by the Supreme Court?
Yeah.
Because the judges, the SEC's internal administrative law judges, were appointed by the SEC and not through the regular judicial process?
Yeah, and there's pieces of this, so it didn't go through the normal judicial process because they didn't have enough people on hand. They went with what they had, and the judges said no. It's very similar to immigration law. Something just happened with immigration law where there was an immigration authority order, an ICE order to an illegal immigrant to appear in court, but it didn't have the date of the court appearance on the document, which was thrown out at the highest level, at the Supreme Court. It was thrown out. You can't tell people just to show up in court.
Well, he probably showed up at some point.
Right, because there's no way to verify that it happened, because the courts need a date and a time to see you. If you just show up, you did your job. You're there.
Yes. Well, now the other interpretation is the person could be required to live in the courtroom.
That's true. You could just show up and live in the courtroom for the rest of the time. I don't think the judge is going to like that.
No, particularly since there's no bathroom actually in the courtroom.
There are many immigration cases that are getting thrown out at this point, and this is by a Republican-led Supreme Court, not because they are suddenly rampantly pro-illegal immigration, but because they are always and will always be pro-rule of law. You can't tell people, show up at the corner of 5th and 29th Street at some random date, and say that that's when your court case is going to be.
5th and 29th.
I just made that up.
But they never intersect.
They're both odd streets. So they might. And some, I mean, you've never been to Boston, obviously.
Ah, okay.
Boston is not done normally.
Anyway.
So on to your SEC shutting down a big Ponzi scam. $345 million Ponzi
scheme. There's a lot of Ponzi schemes apparently have popped up in this bull market, and they tend to mature and become more prolific and out there.
I'm going to ask the question, and you can answer it. What's a Ponzi scheme?
Well, a Ponzi scheme is named after a guy, I forgot his first name, named Ponzi. James Ponzi? Something like that. Who in the 1920s, in the raging bull market of the 1920s, had this brilliant idea that you could buy U.S., there's certain, a version of U.S. and foreign postal allocations, whereby they were...
Charles Ponzi.
Whereby the United States government, for example, would reimburse foreign governments for postal expenses that were excessive in the United States compared with them. It was a treaty thing. And he claimed he was buying these things and then selling them back to the United States government or foreign governments at a tremendous markup because it was a screw-up in the treaty and it couldn't be changed and Congress had authorized it and there was nothing they could do about it. So he could buy as many as he wanted to and sell them back at a much higher price.
Now, the problem with that is none of that was true.
That's correct. There was a small number of them that was happening, but only a very small number were ever issued. Now, the point is that people then, the early investors in Charles Ponzi's scheme, came in and they gave him money, and he really didn't buy postal receipts or whatever they're called at the time.
He gave them some of their own money back as investment returns.
Right. And they said, hey, look, I get these tremendous double-digit investment returns each year.
Word of mouth spreads.
Right. And then more people brought the money in. And what happens in a Ponzi scheme, sometimes called a pyramid scheme, is the later investors' money coming in is used to pay the earlier investors.
Who feel like they're making a lot of money, and they tell even more people.
Right. They talk it up, and they talk it up, and they talk it up. Meanwhile, the majority of the money is going into the pocket of the person who perpetrated the Ponzi scheme.
It's not a new, as of Charles Ponzi era scheme. He's just the one that it got named after.
And Madoff was doing that. And
it's
a lot
exactly
of
the same, yeah.
But the point is they're going on all the time. And having now been 35 years in this business, I have seen so many go by. It's astonishing.
Well, and part of this big one was in Texas.
Right. They tend to proliferate during bull markets. And
they tend to get caught in the bears.
And so people get approached. And let me tell you, there's a really simple way to avoid being involved in these things.
Yeah, very simple.
And it is, first off, investigate before you invest. Google is a wonderful tool. Google this wonderful idea that your neighbor came up with that they're making a lot of money on. And go to the SEC and see if it's registered at the SEC. It's not that hard.
So this particular Ponzi scheme that just got shut down, and it's not the only one. There had been a series of them, but this is the biggest one in the last few months, $345 million, was a group of people basically saying that they were buying up debt at really, really high interest rates at big discounts because the people that were selling them just thought the debt would never get paid back. That was the claim. And they were putting a guaranteed 12% rate of return.
By the way, that is like, the 1% per month rate of return is pretty much universal among, not completely, but largely universal among Ponzi schemes.
So if anybody ever tells you that's 1% a month, all of your warning bells and red flags and curse words should start coming out at that point.
A few years ago, there was a real estate Ponzi scheme that was exposed in Houston, where a guy was actually getting mortgages, old mortgage documents, and showing that they had a really high interest rate on the mortgage.
Right. These are mortgages from many years before.
We're pooling your money together to buy these buildings, buy these mortgages, and when we buy the mortgage, it's obviously paying 12%. Therefore, what's 1% a month, and you get 1% a month.
And the thing is, with these documents, the documents that were being shown in that particular Ponzi scheme were correct. They were valid documents.
They just were old mortgages that had been refinanced
correct.
At a lower rate.
Yeah, they were mortgages from decades before when interest rates were much higher.
And then
they had been refinanced, but the documents still existed.
And here's an irony. This Ponzi scheme that the SEC shut down has been going on about 15 years, which means that there are investors, and this is how they primarily spread. You might know somebody who for 15 years was getting their 1% per month steady return, never losing any money, always having a constant principal, getting a statement every month from the investment in this deal, and getting his 1%. And I mean, after 15 years of getting 1% a month return on your money,
it's really hard to argue with that.
And in many cases, and with Madoff and others, if he went to liquidate, they'd probably pay him back his money, his
all of
principal.
It. Here's the thing, just with Madoff, if you've been making that money for a long, long time in a Ponzi scheme, the government's going to come and take it back.
That's right. And if you don't have it because you spent it, too bad. They're still going to want it back, and you could wind up in bankruptcy very quickly.
This is stolen goods. It's very similar to the first caller asking about counterfeit money. You've got to do your due diligence, because if you're being paid money that is illegal money, at some point, you're going to owe that back. If the bad guys get caught, which we all want them to be, and we've said it from a point that sounds really, really good. I mean, what's wrong with a Ponzi scheme if people have been paid for 15 years at a 1% a year? The problem with the Ponzi scheme is that if you go to liquidate your assets at the same time that other people are liquidating their assets,
there won't be any money there.
The money's all gone. This is how Madoff got busted, is that in the Great Recession and the collapse of the market, his statements were still saying you're making 12% a year. And that had lasted for decades. People were very respectful of this whole Madoff investment thing. And then enough people needed money to support their lifestyle based on the other losses that they'd had in the market. They said, well, we're going to sell some of our winners to support the things that will recover over this long term. Steven Spielberg, a lot of big names were involved here. They went to sell, and enough of them sold at the same time that there wasn't enough money to go around.
I'm going to give some advice here, general advice, not investment advice. And because there are not only illegal Ponzi schemes such as this one, there are legal Ponzi schemes. They generally wind up with the principals getting in trouble, in many cases going to jail, but still they're properly registered with the SEC.
Right.
They're called non-traded alternative investments. Now, is every non-traded alternative investment a Ponzi scheme?
Absolutely
no.
Not.
But many of them are, and I certainly followed a series of them over the years, where a properly registered non-traded real estate investment trust, for example, where the majority of the money flowing into the trust, or at least a large minority of the money, was actually going into the pockets of the people who created the trust. And the point is, the price on the trust never varied or went up slowly each year.
Nothing's being sold out of it.
Because it's not traded on the market. If you're going to be involved in something as an investment, it either needs to be a regularly traded investment, which means you can go to Morningstar or Google or lots of places.
Get a good quote.
Yahoo Finance and whatever. Type in the symbol for it, and you can see that it's being traded regularly, and there's a lot of them being traded back and forth, and that means that the market price is correct. Or be personally involved in the investment if it's not traded. For example, let's just say you and five other people get together and you buy some rental properties. And you've done your research, and or maybe you buy the rental property on your own and you fix it up on your own and you rent it out and you can see the cash flow and you've got a CPA that says, yeah, you're making money on this deal.
You either need to see the accounting yourself from a third party.
Right.
Or you need to make sure that there is a third party auditor that regularly audits the statements.
Unless, of course, you're personally involved and you buy a rental property and you're renting them out.
But then you see the auditing yourself. You are the auditor.
I must admit, though, I, on several occasions, have personally audited investors who have a series of rental properties that had mortgages on them and were paying out and were getting rent coming in, as well as working for somewhere else. And I've discovered in those cases
they were losing money every year.
They're losing money every year and didn't know it, and they felt like they could make up the difference on volume. But still, the important thing to recognize is if somebody comes to you or your neighbor is getting rich on some investment that is not available to the public and it's super secret, or it maybe not be super secret, but it's something that the only the rich people do and the common people don't know about.
And those are key words to a scam.
You can no matter how long it's been working, it's dangerous, and there's a very high probability you're going to lose your shirt on that deal.
Yeah. So then one of the three principles in this particular Ponzi scheme we're talking about was based in Texas.
Actually, two of the three, it turned out.
A great deal of the assets that were stolen were from small investors. They had some big investors that lost money, too. And the SEC is going to go in there and try to make everybody whole. But the problem with that is that a lot of this money went to do things like buy Ferraris. And cars aren't worth more after you buy them.
A $168,000 23-carat diamond bracelet.
Right. $330,000 7-carat diamond ring.
And they spent $13 million at casinos and didn't get anything back.
Well, that's just one of them.
Oh.
Yeah. All three of them had millions of dollars going to casinos. So not only did the scammers scam, they also then went and blew the money. They didn't even buy things that were reasonable things to buy. And that's another thing. If the guy giving you investment advice is driving a Ferrari, that's not necessarily a sign of success. It's a sign that they don't know how to use the money that they're receiving. If somebody is giving you financial advice of any way and is driving a car that is a annual salary of a high-level executive, it means that they don't know the value of money anymore. That's a kind of a strong statement, but it's a good kind of easy check. Look to see if they're driving something that's way over the top luxurious, because they're not taking the advice that they're giving you if that's the case. Because you could do a lot better with the money than buying a Lamborghini. We're about out of time for this hour.
We're getting close to that.
I want to put that plug in again for the Chocolate and Wine Festival taking place this weekend. If this weekend is the 22nd and the 23rd, then we're talking about a live date. But Salado's Chocolate and Wine Weekend is going on. Salado Montessori is doing a grape stomp, which I recommend
everybody go do.
Yeah, it's a really grape stomp. Get your feet in the grapes.
It's a great stomp.
Just as a side note, nobody's actually going to drink the grape juice that's produced by feet.
Really?
But it's going to be fun anyway. You'll get a T-shirt with your own footprint on the T-shirt in the process. So enjoy the wine, enjoy the chocolate. Head to Salado this weekend and have a good time. Even if it's raining, which I don't think it will be, but even if it is, there is cover, and it will pay for itself with a little sip of wine.
And you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, which not coincidentally is the name of a registered investment advisory firm. It does wealth management, particularly for families, in Salado, Texas. Telephone number there if you'd like to contact us. We have voicemail on the weekend. Real people during the week is
254-947-1111 or
toll free 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. You can email us directly at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. We do read those. We use them for material on the program. Until next hour,
this has been The Personal Wealth.